This hour of Cairo Nights is brought to you by Washington Energy Services.
Broadcasting live from the Carter Subaru Studios, you're listening to Cairo Nights. Happy Tuesday. I am G. Scott. Yes, it was some big news today. Big news for all hockey fans. Big news for everybody that's in Seattle. Even big news for Seattle Mariners fans because of all the news y'all been getting the entire time. But hockey, it's official. 2021, it will be coming to town. Drew Barth is here and my main man, Mike Lewis, our Cairo news reporter. Mike, thanks for joining us, brother.
Always happy to.
Okay, man. I'm going to go ahead and let you tell us about the news and what was going on downtown. Then I'll get into my whole hockey deal in a second and everything.
I'll leave you plenty of time.
Yeah, leave you plenty of time. You were downtown today. Tell us what was going on, man.
So they decided to do the official announcement party. I mean, it's the worst kept secret in sports. No one was even denying that it was going to happen today. But today, the NHL owners group in Georgia announced that Seattle is officially getting its hockey team. They also announced, and they tried to sort of stuff it within the big announcement that the team is getting here, that, oh, wait, going to be a year later than we had been claiming. The funny thing is, though, if you go back through the NHL League Commissioner Gary Bettman, if you go back through his quotes over the last 2 or 3 months, he kept saying, you know, we're fine if it goes 2021. We don't need it to be 2020. And the first time he said that, I think I said on one of the shows here, that means it's 2021. I mean, as soon as he was trying to lay the groundwork to let everyone know the 2 years was a pipe dream, and now we're going to go 3 on the rebuild. I think it's a smarter idea. I kind of wish they hadn't pushed so hard on the 2020 because I think they knew from the get-go it was a near impossible task to rebuild the interior of an arena in one of the most densely populated neighborhoods in the West Coast, much less in Seattle. It was going to be a heavy, difficult lift, like a 7-day-a-week, 24-hour construction job to do it. They finally cried uncle with the blessing of the NHL. They really just wanted to make sure they got this team. And then, you know, the way it is, what's the saying about apologize later? This is kind of what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. Ask for forgiveness.
Exactly.
Later. Tell us why this is good for the city of Seattle.
You know, so it's good for Key Arena, and it's good for the city of Seattle to the extent that you link sports teams and your sort of civic pride. I don't necessarily do that. I'm a sports fan, but for me, not having an NHL team would have been fine. I think an NHL team is a very obvious thing for Seattle because there's a NHL team not far away in Canada. They would love to have a regional rival. If you look at the way the Sounders were marketed, far more successful than anyone expected it to be. It's apparently a big enough city, although I worry that if you do this and then you have NBA, that's a lot of entertainment dollars you are trying to gather from the populace. And I'm a way bigger NBA fan than I am an NHL fan. But that said, I plan on going to some games.
But also, I mean, because now you're going to be looking at, if you did have the NBA come back, then you have the NHL and NBA going on concurrently, and then you're going to be having to ask some people to make some choices some evenings.
Absolutely. And what you're going to do is if all of our teams are doing well, everyone will be fine. There is enough money in town to do that. But if all of our teams, if some of the teams are not doing well, you know, and I'm not suggesting that the Mariners won't be doing well, but let's just use them as an example. Mm-hmm. If all the teams aren't doing well, someone is going to start suffering because these teams make a lot of money on season tickets. And people have any season ticket in Seattle is an expensive proposition. The least expensive is probably the Sounders. And that is $1,000 a year for a decent seat. And so hockey season tickets, I mean, I'm on the list. I don't know. I imagine I'm going to get a bit of sticker shock when it happens. I have no idea what a Seahawks season ticket is, but I know it's pricey. Mariners as well. We don't have that much money. And most economists will say sports teams they may improve a neighborhood's economy. They really don't improve a municipality's economy because it's just shifting money from one place to another place.
We're joined here by Mike Lewis, our Cairo news reporter here on Cairo Nights. Mike, hold up. Did you just say that you're on the list for the season tickets, but you don't know how much the season ticket's going to cost?
I'm not exactly sure because they haven't announced the prices, but my guess is that it's going to be given Seattle's economy, because the most expensive tickets right now are either Toronto Maple Leafs or Montreal Canadiens. And now these are in Canadian dollars, but you do the conversion. You know, if you want good seats, now I'm not talking about like on the glass. Though I don't even know what those cost. I don't even know if they sell those to normal human beings. But if you want decent seats, you're probably going to spend, you know, $6,000 to $8,000 per ticket. That's a lot of money.
Well, per ticket
for a season, because you've got 40 home games.
NHL,
and so you've got a lot of games to be played.
That adds up fast,
and that is not going to pay for your playoff ticket. And as we know in the NHL, everyone gets in the playoffs anyway, so you're going to have to pay for that if you choose to. Otherwise, the team is happy to sell them for you.
Okay, Drew was talking about it, which is a great point. Talking about NBA, hypothetically it being here, and I'll get to us what this whole decision did for my NBA love here in a second. But when it comes to logistically speaking, talking about that many games, 47 home games for NHL, 47 home games for NBA, and everybody and their mama moving here to Seattle, we already got traffic problems. Logistically, can that happen here?
Well, I mean, if you want to look on the upside of all of this, if you think of Mercer as not as a boulevard, but as a parking lot, you're fine. and I think that if you start looking at things in a slightly different way, G, you'll see that it's just a lot more available parking. You'll be able to drive on to Mercer, leave your car there all day, come back the next day, pick it up, go where you need to go. So I think maybe it's a matter of perspective. I don't think it's fair to say that it's going to be that bad.
Fair enough.
Everybody remember we parked in the Mercer lot heading eastbound. And then,
exactly.
Is that where you're going to start your shuttle service from? It's just going to be picking up from on Mercer?
Bingo. Perfect. Bingo. I think people should start looking for their e-scooters right now.
Now, the fact that the NHL is an expensive ticket and it is an expensive experience all around, the fact that Seattle is so burgeoning with people with money, is that part of the reason why the NHL was keen on being here in the first place?
So here's the thing, and I'm hoping to look into this a little more closely over the next couple of weeks. The NHL was surprised. I think they were, when the buzz started happening and they were doing their demographic research in Seattle, the team owners, Todd Leiwicki, let's just use him as an example, but David Bonderman and Jerry Bruckheimer, these folks, they all were a little surprised when they sold those deposits. What was 33,000 in 24 hours? They were stunned at the level. And this is what made the NHL sit up and take notice, like, oh, this is a real deal. This is really going to happen. When they did that, they also said sort of quietly on the side that they were surprised at how much of those deposits were urban based. They were like right in Seattle. They weren't the suburbs, which the Seahawks draw from.
Yep.
And so their feeling is that right now the Sounders have an extraordinary percentage of people that use mass transit to get to their games. Their feeling is that this could be somewhat similar to that, and maybe they'll get some form of mitigation. So to your question, is it going to be high dollar people? My guess is if they're living in the city of Seattle, they probably are odds on making a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. And if they're making a little bit of money, the NHL is more than happy to get them. The bigger question is, does this make it more appealing or less appealing to the NBA? David Bonderman, I think, in his more open days, would tell you he's a bigger basketball fan than an NHL fan. But he feels like this arena he wants it to have both tenants. He doesn't just want it to have one. So I think that, everyone seems to think this makes it more appealing to the NBA, but maybe I'm not in that camp.
I know what camp I'm in. I was a little bitter. I got a little bitter on Twitter. I tried to be excited. I tried. This was like when all the season tickets were being sold and the deposits and 24 hours and 33,000. I was like, yeah, yeah. And then today they said, oh, Seattle's getting hockey. I was like, oh, man. Like, I was bitter, Mike. Yeah. Like, I was bitter because this town should have an NBA team. Still, and I'm not trying to bring up the past, but I think bringing in a new relationship made us think about the other relationship that walked out the door, and we was together 40 years.
Yeah, no, and a championship. Everyone, I mean, that was that team. If you were living in Seattle at a certain period of time, there's never been a football team, and I would include the Seahawks in this that has been that popular. They were ridiculously, if you look back to the 70s, 80s, that team was so popular in this town. It was so beloved in Seattle that it people who weren't here then, I wasn't here then, but I do know history, and I was a big basketball fan. I mean, I think that you're completely right. And the real question is whether or not this makes it more likely or less likely. I mean, all of these leagues are pretty, they're pretty extended right now. I don't see a whole lot of opportunities for new franchises. Even the MLS has sort of picked all the low-hanging fruit. So what are we going to get from basketball? I think the only thing that could happen is a team moving here.
Bingo. That's the only way. I mean, the only way Seattle can get a team is to break other kids' hearts in another city.
Yeah, I was about to say, how would people in Seattle feel about that? I mean, in the immediate...
I wouldn't care, Drew.
You wouldn't care?
No.
I don't care who you have to rob.
I think they would feel dynamite about that, actually. And in fact, they were feeling dynamite about it when it nearly happened with the Kings.
Yeah, that's
sure
true.
Did. My man, Hanson. Where does he go from here, Mike Lewis?
I don't know where he is right now. I mean, I've tried to reach him. I've tried to find out, where does this leave you? He still owns a bunch of property that has all gone up in value. He's going to be fine financially. No question about that. But everyone forgets, like, the money behind Hanson was widely believed to be Steve Ballmer money. Steve Ballmer has his team. Steve Ballmer wanted to actually buy this team many, many years ago when the Ackerleys were selling to Schultz. Steve Ballmer wanted to be the guy that he backed out when Microsoft stock took a big plunge and he lost, you know, $100 million on his stock value. And he said, whoa, maybe not today. That's when Schultz stepped in and decided to buy the team. But I think Ballmer was in front. Ballmer was some of the money behind Hanson right now. Where is Hanson? Well, he's not going to get his arena. No question. That's dead. That's as dead can be. Is he going to get some? So is the council going to throw him a bone on a rezone that would boost the value of his land? Let's just say it's probably not going to be residential, but let's say they go to regular commercial and allow him to put in retail and blah, blah, blah. He still has two big stadiums there that draw a lot of people. That's a possibility. So I think he has land. He has land that he can actually sell or develop. I think he is not going to get a street vacation, and he's not going to get his arena.
What's next? What's next for all of us here in Seattle? We know we found an announcement 2021. What are some things, monumental times we need to be looking forward to?
So I would say, one, you know, there's going to be any number of stories, a lot of reporters paying attention to how they keep to the construction schedule. If they end up with any lawsuits when they go through the environmental impact process, there is going to be one. When they start trying to figure out how they're going to move people around down there, and this is going to be the fun one, when they try to integrate the light rail and that last mile of monorail to the arena, that's going to be interesting. And then, but the big one that everyone's going to pay the most attention to is going to be when they announce a team name. So you're going to get a chance to relive your agony time and time again over the next 3 years as they keep bringing this issue back up. But the team name is going to be the next big step.
Business owners down in the area, are they celebrating? Are they all the bars that's down in that area, are they celebrating?
They are. They are not celebrating yet, but they will be celebrating, I think. It's going to be 3 years of everything being kind of tied up. So when it's tied up like that, you know, I think they're not going to be celebrating because construction is going to be an extended process. But once the team gets open, my guess is they're going to be celebrating then.
Mike Lewis, really appreciate you coming on, man. It really sucks that Blitz came in here and messed up the interview. I mean, we're talking hockey, not Seahawks, and he's rubbing on your head right there.
I needed that. I needed that wipe down.
Drew, our very own Rachel Bell had a feature that I want us both to listen to. She couldn't be with us today to do it, so I figured we'll just kind of do it without her, even though it makes it better when she's here. Check this out. I'm just
bored. Minneapolis-based singer and rapper Dessa struggled with a breakup for years. She just couldn't get over this guy. Going crazy.
So I had been dating a guy in my rap crew, and when we broke up, we remained musical collaborators and tour companions, and so it was important to both of us to still get along. But that made it difficult to get any space to heal up. So I found that this was like one of the definitive struggles in my adult life.
Dessa struggled for about a decade and finally did what many of us do. She turned to the internet for guidance.
So I saw a TED Talk by a woman named Dr. Helen Fisher, where she had put subjects into an fMRI machine so that she could see how the brains of people in love worked. And it turns out that there's this really definitive pattern that she noted. So people in love, in romantic love, had this distinct pattern of cortical activity. And I thought, whoa, it didn't really occur to me that there would be a place in the brain that might be responsible for this feeling or that might participate in this feeling in such a reliable way. And if I went and found my love in my brain, maybe that would allow me to take it out.
The TED Talk led Dessa to a therapy called neurofeedback.
I worked with a team of researchers to try to run a little case study. So first, I went to the Center for Magnetic Resonance Research at the University of Minnesota, and I got into an fMRI machine, thought about my ex-boyfriend, and we were able to see this pattern of brain activity that was consistent with someone who was in love. And then I worked with a woman named Penny Jean Gracefire, who has for many years worked in a technique called neurofeedback. So I hooked up my brain to like 20-some electrodes that were sensitive enough to detect my brain waves through my scalp. So you kind of sit in a chair with all these electrodes streaming out of your hair, and you can see your brain working in real time on a screen. And through a series of lights and sounds, you try to slowly change the way that your brain is working. And in my case, I was trying to promote like healthy levels of activity in the parts of my brain that are most directly associated with romantic attachment.
And 3 months later,
I went back into the fMRI machine to see if there was any difference in the way that my brain was behaving after having done these neurofeedback sessions. And I don't want to overstate anything because I'm a sample size of one. So this is not how definitive science works, right? This is a case study and not an experiment. But it did feel different. And it was exciting to see that my brain did seem to show this preferential activation for my ex before the neurofeedback and not in the same way afterwards. I also felt a little different. I hadn't erased memories of him, but I did feel more at peace and I didn't feel so compulsed or obsessed on or fixated on this dude.
Do a lot of people bring up Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind when you talk about this?
They do. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so the difference is, you know, I wasn't trying to forget my life.
Well, Dessa's case study is unique to her. There's not a bunch of research out there on neurofeedback and love. Neurofeedback is used for all kinds of other things, to help people with ADHD, anxiety, trauma, and many other brain-related conditions so people can try and change their patterns. And there are a few places in Seattle that offer this kind of therapy. To find them, just Google Neurofeedback Seattle.
Drew, yes. I've always just had a simple rule.
Mm-hmm.
Not where I work, not where I live. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And not the gym.
Oh, that's a good
not
one.
Not where I work out. Mm-mm.
A lot of people wouldn't think of that.
No, not where I work out, not where I work, and not where I live. I am not going to date you. I don't know for you. I don't know how it is for you, man. Mm-hmm. But when they're ex for a reason for me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if anything, like she said, this is only a small sample size.
Sure.
I'm glad she said that. But for me, man, I got to get rid of everything. I'm getting rid of pictures. I'm getting rid of everything. Your mm-hmm. ex, done.
Yeah, it can be really difficult, especially if the breakup is not amicable on both sides. When one person feels like, no, I still wanted this to keep going for a bit longer. I feel like if there was a possibility to have that feeling removed, I know that a handful of times in my life, I would have paid a large amount of money if I could just make that feeling of unrequited love or just that sense of kind of yearning for somebody else to disappear. I might have considered that.
The way you just put it just right there,
mm-hmm.
if there's like this magic pill mm-hmm. that you could take, hey, you take this magic pill right here
mm-hmm.
and all of the feelings of your current ex are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Man, player. That would have been worth, let's see, a while ago, about $5,000.
Yeah.
Let me get that.
Yeah, it's you know, I think that this is cool, but at the same time, there's a little part of me that's a little bit wistful about this, about the idea of being able to actually map out supposedly love in
right.
your brain.
Right.
Don't you kind of want it to be magical? Something that you just can't quite explain by science? Isn't it? Shouldn't it be something that's just...
I like where you're going with that. Yep.
A little lighter, ethereal.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, hey, so what? You know what? I can't.
We'll never know because it's
never know.
Love.
Yep. You guys been listening to Cairo Nights. I am G. Scott. Welcome back into Cairo Nights. I am G. Scott. Coming up in 15 minutes, we're going to have your opportunity to get Seahawks tickets. You'll be able to try to win those, but you got to get the code word, and we're going to be giving that away in 15 minutes. So make sure you continue listening, and then you take that code word, you're going to go to My Northwest, and I'll give you all the instructions right then. So remember, that's going to happen in 15 minutes. Right now, I saw an interesting article talking about Wall Street and what's happening right now with Wall Street, the Me Too movement, and what has been taking place since then. A wealth advisor kind of put it this way. He said that just hiring a woman these days, and now these are some anonymous folks that are talking about it in Wall Street. And what they're saying is just hiring a woman these days is a unknown risk. And one of the things it says is, what if she took something he said the wrong way? Across Wall Street, men are adopting controversial strategies for the Me Too era. And in the process, what they're doing is they're making life even harder for women. Call it the Pence effect that they're talking about. That you guys know, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence, he has this thing where he avoids dining alone with any women other than his wife in finance or anything like that. So there was interviews that were done with more than 30 senior executives that suggest many are spooked by the Me Too movement and they're kind of struggling to cope. This is something that is pretty scary. And Drew, I want to have a conversation with this because I feel that there's two ways we can have this. Mm. There's two ways we can have this conversation. And the one way to have this conversation, right, would be, wow, this is crazy. I cannot believe these men are thinking and talking like that. This is stupid, blah, blah. This shouldn't even be a story. They should not be afraid of the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. Let's just go ahead and blast these anonymous colleagues that are coming out mm-hmm. and talking about this and then move on. That's one way we can do it. But I think that's doing the conversation. I think that's doing it an injustice because lately, and you mentioned this earlier, over the last 4 months, the Me Too conversation in regards to celebrities or somebody, the whole quote unquote, another one, it has been quiet, would you say, over the last 4 months?
Yeah, I would say that any conversations that have existed about the Me Too movement have dealt more with people like Louis C.K. and people who are trying to kind of reintegrate themselves back into their lives or back into their professions and finding out that sort of the court of public opinion is saying, no, not enough time has passed yet. So I feel like we'll either hear Me Too reference in that or I feel like the only other time I've really thought about the Me Too movement in general is just the fact that I haven't heard as much right. recently. It's been the lack of stories that's been catching my attention.
Well, I guess for me, the only way for me to, I want to be very transparent in this conversation that we're having about the whole Me Too movement. And then seeing that men in Wall Street and seeing men across the country are starting to reevaluate how they do things and maybe are suggesting, you know what, I'm not going to be in a situation, the Mike Pence rule, those things. I guess where I want to be transparent at is this. For me, Drew, I told you, I just was in a situation where I always worked for myself. Mm. I didn't work in corporate America. I didn't have a job worker. I was working for I own my own business, car mm-hmm. detailing service. Mm-hmm. So I didn't work with anyone.
Probably not a lot of sexual harassment videos that you had to watch.
No.
You got it.
Oh, yeah, I think I watched one. yeah, that's right. I did at the very mm-hmm. beginning. So I never did that. But what I will say is that when the Me Too movement started to happen and I started to hear of different examples, I have to be honest with you, Drew. There are things that during the Me Too movement and things and stories start coming out, there were things like that I said to myself, oh, wow, you can't do that?
But isn't that fantastic, though? I mean, isn't that probably for anybody that wasn't directly implicated by the Me Too movement or had somebody that they could point to and say that this person treated me in an unfair way, at the very least, for people like you that just heard about it enough to the point where you're like, maybe I should stop and think about how I conduct myself. I feel like that in and of itself has been a great victory for the movement itself.
I can, well, Drew, I could sit here and say it's fantastic, but there's a part of me that kind of feels a little guilty.
Why is that?
It's because I kind of feel that if this was going on in my 20s, I'll give you an example. One of the things when sometimes I would be, I mean, and by the way, I don't think any of this funny, but I'm trying to be transparent and honest about this conversation. There were times in the nightclubs that you'd be going out, right? And there was a lady, good looking lady that I thought was good looking. And to get her attention, I would grab her by her arm, right? Well, looking back and that now, from my I'm like, oh, how much of a jerk are you to grab a woman? You know what I mean? Grab her by her arm. Or in my 20s, I would have probably had no problem asking out a coworker to go to work. And it could have, I could have maybe gone out after work or something like that, had drinks with the coworkers, maybe been in a situation where I had drinks and maybe said something that might have made her feel uncomfortable. Again, no, I've never had that happen. But I never had that happen because I was never in that situation. And so, yes, I was, I feel like I was fortunate enough to just like, oh man, listen to these stories. And, but I also feel that there are some people who have had, who've lost their lives behind this, where some of them I believe deserved it. Does that make sense? And I'm not, and I don't want to dilute the movement, okay, what I'm saying, but I do feel like there are some that are like, oh man. I didn't mean to do that.
Sure.
You know, it, you know what I mean?
It's a difference between the intentions and as we say, the optics of it all.
Yes.
How it looks as opposed to how it feels. And I think that I think my response to all this would be, because I feel like I don't think you are anywhere close to alone in that there are a number of people who are out there being like, look, I need to really think about every interaction that I have from this point forward and having that kind of constantly in the back of your mind a little bit. But I think that what I get worried about and what it seems like this article is highlighting is that instead of men taking a beat and being like, we need to correct our behavior altogether, instead they're just like, you know what? You know what's the easiest way to not have to deal with a woman saying that I sexually harassed her? Just not having to deal with a woman in the first place. And that cuts such a massive, massive swath through so much so much progress that women have made.
And the truth be told, I don't think anybody... I don't think a man out there wants, well, maybe there are, the majority of, okay, good men do not want women isolated in that way, right? But the same good man also comes into it like, look, man, I don't want to mess up. I got a family to feed. I don't want to say anything wrong. I don't want to make anybody feel uncomfortable or anything to put anybody in a situation. So you might have a good man that says, you know what? I'm just going to mind my business and I'm going to do things a little different. And how about some, let's just say some of the good men that do work in companies in which somebody else lost their job because of the Me Too movement, and somebody coming out saying, hey, this person was sexual harassment, then the next man in the next cubicle over is sitting there like, you know what? I'm just coming to work every single day. And that might, that's a normal reaction, kind of. Don't you think, Drew?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think there are a lot of people that heard stories coming out or possibly coworkers that were implicated over one thing or another and had that feeling of like, you know what? From this point forward, I am just going to put my nose to the grindstone. And that's all that I'm about. I'm worried.
Did you ever think about some things, Drew?
No,
you never did.
No,
huh?
I never did.
Really?
I did, and you know what? If that makes me the bad person, and if there were some people I treated along the way that I could have done a better job with, then that is on me. But personally, I didn't have that feeling.
Like you never since then. You've never come to work and actually had it on your mind. Like, hey, I need to make sure, because I know I have, man.
No.
Really?
No, I treat people the exact same way as I did before.
I promise you I have, man. I promise you.
I think that's great, though. I think it's great to at least have your thinking elevated a little bit.
Yeah. Coming up next is time for question of the day, and also get ready for that cold word for Seahawks tickets. I'm G. Scott. Welcome back into Cairo Nights. I am G. Scott. Happy Tuesday, y'all. It's now time to announce our code word for your chance to win Seahawks tickets. Head to MyNorthwest.com/win and enter the code word interception by the end of this show to be entered to win two tickets to see the Seahawks host the Kansas City Chiefs December 23rd. Remember, this code word will expire at the end of this show. Listen all day tomorrow for more chances to win. That's all day tomorrow for your chances to win. MyNorthwest.com/win. That code word is interception. That's spelled with an I, not an E. Drew, what do you got, buddy?
Now, the Cairo Knights question of the day.
All right, this is a little bit of a different one, but I kind of like this. What is on your anti-bucket list? Things that you'll accept not having done when you die.
Mountain climbing.
Really?
Jumping out of an airplane. Eating green bean casserole on Thanksgiving.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
You guys want me to keep going?
Yeah, go ahead.
What kind of list you got?
Going down to the Amazons.
Uh-huh.
Let's see what else I got.
What, Amazon and South Lake Union? Or
no.
I don't even talk about
it. You let the Amazon come to you. Oh, I see.
Yeah. There you go.
He does.
I mean, we can continue going, but I'll just stop right there.
Okay.
I'm not skydiving for nobody. Nobody.
No. Pass.
Pass.
Hard pass. On
hard
it.
Pass. Mm-mm.
Frank, what about you? Are we going to see you up in the skies?
No. That was definitely on my list, but the one that after a little bit of thought I came to is I do not aspire to ever be a big game hunter.
Ooh.
I have no desire to go over to Africa and kill a rare animal.
Yeah.
It's like not even a little.
But what's interesting is that is probably on the bucket list for a lot of people.
Yeah, like yes. I want to go over and kill an elephant.
Yeah.
I
might go over on
me.
A safari to look at animals, take pictures. They do that, right? Photo
yeah,
safaris. That
certainly.
Would be fine.
I mean, Frank, you just went to the Dakotas and took
that's
pictures
right.
of...
dead presidents. It's great.
David, what about you? Do you have something that is on your anti-bucket list? Something you have no desire to do?
You know, I got to say, I think I don't ever need to own a house.
Oh, really?
I don't think I ever will. I mean, I don't think my generation will probably ever get the chance. The general public of my generation will ever get the chance to own a house. And I don't think I need to. I think I'm all right with being a renter.
Ooh, that's what
that's interesting.
I thought about that one.
I had to really just dig into that, man. That was, but you're kind of right.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, you talk about the median home price in the Seattle area is $750,000. I just want to know what kid coming out of college right now, 22 years old, Get the house.
The ones working downtown Seattle, in Amazon or whatever.
Mm.
Those are the ones that can get a house. That's about it. David, do your parents own their place over in Kitsap County?
They do.
Okay,
yeah,
so
they
will
bought
be
it
a
real
homeowner.
Cheap, and then my dad fixed it all up. So
you'll be
him
a homeowner eventually.
Maybe. I mean, they have a beautiful house. I would love to live there at some point.
Frank, why will he be a homeowner?
Because unless they move out of there at some point, you know, if they leave it behind, he will inherit it along with Luke and whatever other Burbanks there are.
There's a lot of people in this world that have homes because they inherited it.
That's correct.
You know where I'm going with that, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking.
By the way,
you know
you're aiming this at me?
No, I'm not aiming at you. I'm just saying, you know, early 1900s, there's a lot of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some people couldn't even get homes. It was actually into the deed. I told you the story about my first home that I lived in.
No, you did not.
My dad had to put it in someone else's name because black people were not allowed in that neighborhood.
Seriously?
Wow.
Yes.
That's disgusting.
Mm. Frank, go fix it.
I would.
That's just how. That's how the rules were.
Wow.
That's how it's called redlining. And you guys, we don't have to go through a history lesson here or anything
no,
like that.
No, we just evolved.
Not yes. Something we had a lot of out here in Seattle.
Mm.
And it's because it's a relatively new community, right?
So there was redlining here,
not to the degree that I think they had back east.
No, not that bad, but it was here. You know,
no,
it was here.
Sure
and
were,
the,
you know,
oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it was everywhere.
Mm.
Drew?
You know, I think that the thing you said about the Amazon, like, I wish that I were Superman just so I could just walk through a jungle, because otherwise, I don't think I'll do it. Unless I am impervious to all sorts of stings, bites, venoms, whatsoever, diseases, I think it would be really fascinating to go there if I could do it in a plastic bubble.
Before we get out of here, you know what would be the worst fear in the world?
What's that?
Down in the Amazon.
Yeah.
Dark.
Yes.
And you're hearing all the noises.
Oh, and there's a porta potty.
And that's the only place you can go. Yes. It's getting worse by the moment. And you don't have a flashlight. Jeez, speechless.
I can't believe you guys went there. Yeah. You went with porta. You're going to force me into a porta potty?
Yes. That's a callback from several weeks ago.
Coming up next, Stacy, Joe, and I have a conversation. We like to have one of these weekly conversations. This time we break down the Kareem Hunt incident in the NFL. You listen to Kyle Knight, I'm G. Scott.